السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته يا شيخنا، أحسن الله إليكم.
I'm using a phone, a different phone.
نعم.
How are you? How are you?
الحمد لله.
We can go without mask.
نعم يا شيخنا.
الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له. وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم. أما بعد. Today, بإذن الله, I sincerely apologize that we should have read the next chapter in our book, Al-Adab al-Mufrad. But I think what we will do today, Abu Yusuf, is that we will take the questions we have had previously and try to attend to as much as possible, inshallah, within the next 30 minutes. We'll be stopping the class today by 7 a.m., inshallah, in another 29 minutes, inshallah. So if we have a few questions between now and the next 29 minutes, meaning that our class today will only take half the time that it takes, and that we'll only be attending to the questions and answers that we may have. Bismillah, by Yusuf, bismillah. If you have one or two questions, then we can start with them before others come to you. Do you have some?
Yes, I have some. I'm just trying to retrieve them from the link.
The discussions have been about the yatama, those are the orphans, a boy or a girl whose father has passed away. We also discussed the aramil or the armala. If you say armala, that is the singular of it. We repeatedly mentioned that armala is the woman who got into the present condition of al-irmal, that is al-faqru, the condition of poverty, and al-zad, the fact that the person loses sustenance, the multi zawj, because the zawj passes away, or because she doesn't even have a zawj in the first place. We mentioned that that word armala, although more widely used regarding a woman whose husband passes away, that we call a widow. The armala is the woman who has no husband, is due for marriage, she's matured, yet she has no husband, or that she has been married and then she became divorced, becoming a woman who becomes cut off from support. The male support, when it gets cut off from a woman, makes her become an armala. May Allah protect each and every one of us. We mentioned in the last class that the one who pays attention to the armala and the yatama, they have the reward of equal persons. They have the reward of mujahidun, they have the reward of al-qa'imun, those who regularly observe the late night prayers. They also have the rewards of as-sa'imun, those who regularly engage in preparatory fasting. And we mentioned in that hadith that followed the last hadith, actually we read the hadith of Aisha, that whoever pays attention to a girl or a boy who is in need or in the circumstance of orphanage, the Prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam, they will be the veil, they will be the covering, protection for such a person away from the fire on the day of Qiyamah. They will be the protection for that person away from the fire on the day of judgment. It's a very, very big virtue that we will attain if we are people who pay attention to the Aramil women, who are widowed or divorced and cut off from male support, or women who are not married at all and cut off from male support. And like we tried to explain yesterday, that means all males, we have to stand up to our responsibilities as husbands. We have to stand up to our responsibilities as fathers, as husbands, as brothers, and be sure that our sisters are not cut off from responsibility, from support. Be sure that your sisters, be sure that your wives, be sure that your mothers, your aunts, and so on, are not cut off from support. Because when they become cut off from support, they come under this name, when they become people of need and want, they become to be referred to as the Aramid or the Ambala. May Allah protect us from this condition. May Allah, those who are in condition already, may Allah ease their affairs and provide for their needs. Likewise, the Yatama, may Allah provide for them. May Allah ease their affairs and guide them aright. So, Bismillah, Abba Yusuf, we can take one or two questions, inshallah, regarding these issues. Bismillah.
Now, Jazakumullah khairan ya Sheikh. May Allah preserve you from goodness. The question reads, for how long does a man run away from the family, not seen nor heard from his wife and the children before the wives can decide to remarry?
Well, largely the period of 4 months has been mentioned for how long a woman is married. There are issues of 2 years, there are issues of 2 years. It's been seriously mentioned for how long a woman can stay without a husband. What is Allahu A'lam, most preponderant because of the variance, that's because there's no clear cut narration from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam regarding how long a woman should stay. There's no clear cut narration from the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. And the degree of the ability of a woman to be patient, it varies. A woman may be patient for 1 year, one may be patient for 2 years, and so on. When she does not see or have any information, she becomes cut off from any sort of information from a male. Sometimes it may be deliberate from the male, sometimes it may not be deliberate, it may just become lost. May Allah protect us. So when this happens, the woman, depending on for how long she can wait, but I think most of the scholars have mentioned periods of between 4 months and 2 years. The opinions vary within this period of 4 months and 2 years. I don't know anyone who has said anything less than 4 months. If we say for 4 months, she should wait. I don't know anybody who said that she should wait for less than 4 months. We can say from 4 months, she should begin to get the matter reported to constituted authority. She would approach the authority, they would investigate and try to connect her with the husband. They will also find out, sometimes the court itself may become responsible for the women, according to the ability of the court. Sometimes the court, after their investigation, they will be the ones to start a procedure for proper separation, when the woman will be granted the permission for separation from that man who had become lost. There are some that have been mentioned regarding this. One of them was an incident in the time of Umar ibn al-Khattab that was mentioned by Imam al-Bayhaqi, by the man who was taken away by the jinns. I think it was was returning from either Salatul Isha or Salatul Fajr, I think Salatul Isha, he was taken away by the jinns. And it took a long time before he was freed. He was taken away by the jinns, and these group of jinns were taken away. They were jinns from amongst the Kufar. He was taken away and kept in captivity by them. Now there came, I think there was a war, a battle between these non-Muslim jinns and a group of jinns who were Muslims. It was the Muslims who noticed the symbols of Islam in this man when they attacked the non-Muslim jinns. They saw them, they saw this man, and then they asked him, "You like to go back to your family? Where are you from?" And all of these. And they returned him to Medina. I wouldn't remember all the details of this, but I'm just trying to say that things like this have happened in the past. So if the woman reports to constituted authority from after 4 months, the court will begin to pull off the case and the court will act appropriately, inshallah. So we either go to an established Sharia court or in the Sharia committee or in various panels we have in the various states, or that the woman should approach the people, eminent and learned scholars in our community, the imams, even the lad, they will take the appropriate steps and guide her up. Inshallah. I hope that the matter is clear about it.
Now, this one says, is it permissible for a woman to work with her aunt within the limit of Sharia so that she can take care of the poor to get the reward mentioned in this hadith? And I said of Zainab bint Jahsh, radiallahu anha, if her parents are poor and she has a means of working with her aunts to cater for them, is this also permissible? Jazakumullahu khairan.
The working of woman usually can come under any case. And we're in a generation where, because the Western world is talking about women working and earning, the attention of many of the women are upon working and earning these days. So in whatever way, wherever they find an opportunity to raise an issue having to do with women working, they find it a chance to do so. So the basic rule is that the woman is under support in Islam. This is what we have emphasized even this morning. Basically, the woman is under support in Islam. She is to be supported by her husband or brother or father or uncle, as the case may be, by right, as a duty, by the husband or brother or son or uncle, and so on and so forth. This is the circumstance, the basic circumstance Allah has placed the woman. Allah has placed her under the Sharia, under the support of her male husband, relatives, and the rest of them that have been mentioned. But you know, these days we handle issues in the opposite of how they should be. In many homes now, men have left. And that is quite unfortunate. Men have abandoned the responsibility to support women, even though sometimes the abandonment would come from the fact that the women's desires and needs have become things that have become insatiable. So leaving all of these aside, otherwise, the basic rule for a woman is to be under the support of her husband. I've always ever repeated it. The woman is not obliged to be the one working to support her own parents. I've always ever said this. The woman is under the Sharia not required to be the one working to support her own parents. The parents of a woman are supported by their male siblings. The parents of a woman in the Sharia are supported by their male siblings when they are not able to support themselves, to be supported by their male siblings. The woman, the mother, becomes supported by her own brothers, her own uncles, her own nephews, males, her own children, sons. there is no time that the Sharia has placed responsibility or support on the girl, on the daughter. Now, if a woman is married, and despite we have explained these basic rules, they will still be finding, if I want to do it, that remains between that woman and, of course, her husband. It also remains about the lawfulness of that job she's in. It also remains about how that job does not remove her from complying to the issues of dressing and traveling, issues of traveling as far as Islam is concerned. How that job does not make her become a woman who frequents with men in the way our modern society, as we call it, is structured. So that will depend on what the husband sees from the angle of the Sharia, of course, because our abilities are also based on the mission of the husband. You will say that this answer is the summary, in this summary, is that we don't want to open up the bab to say that women go out, start working so that you can support your parents. It is not your job. Your job is to take care of the home of your husband. No woman is asking, excuse me, employ a servant to take care of the home needs. Women are not, they are not asking this question because they are used to it, and they know that we are going to say that no, the woman should basically walk in the home, like Fatima radiallahu anhu, like the wife of Zubayr ibn Awwam, Asma bint Abi Bakr. These are women who walk at home to protect the home, to preserve the home, and be sure that the needs of the home are taken care of. Many women these days don't cook at home, they don't wash at home, they don't sweep, they don't clean, you know, because they want to have an excuse to say, I want to earn money. So in the zeal to earn money, we have abandoned the basic responsibilities of a woman in the society. So if all of these are met, then it depends on what a woman agrees to her husband when such race for earnings does not violate her basic responsibility as a woman at home, because she is ra'iyya, as the Prophet called her, alayhi salatu wasalam, the person in charge of her. She will be asked about how she is taking care of her home. They should be asked about how she can take care of her home, and she's not to be asked of how much did you earn to be able to provide for an orphan physically, because that's not her job. The woman is not in that condition physically. Why will she need her basic responsibilities for a secondary responsibility? I think these are the kinds of answers and explanations and illustrations that I would like to give to that kind of an answer and the circumstance that we have found ourselves. Allahu a'lam.
Is it possible to have an orphan who has started menstruating, but we still consider him, we still consider her mentally not mature?
So once the signs of maturity comes in, the person goes away from being an orphan. The only thing that may remain in terms of intelligence that you are referring to is that handling over property to the person who is not mentally mature to handle that property. But as for being an orphan, once the person becomes mature, he has left or she has left orphanage. Like menstruation is a major symbol, indication of maturity for a girl. Once she becomes mature, she has left orphanage. Ability to handle and control your property is one thing in addition to that. It's one thing in addition to maturity. The person will become matured and will become able to manage the estates that was left for him. So the person is no more an orphan, even though the property may not be handled to him. That was clear in Surah Nisa. So if the person becomes matured, the person has left orphanage. But if the person has not become intellectually mature, the property may still not be handled by him or her. That is, may not be directed to him or her to continue to handle it from those who were handling it when the person was still under offering. I hope that is right, clear. Yeah.
Will it be good to stop the support of a yetim when he or she attains poverty to support another yetim due to limited funds?
Yes, it is lawful. It's the target of the individual to support the yatama or the yetim. And a person graduates into going out of youth. Then the next person in that category can enjoy the funds that you have set aside for that purpose. Yes, there's no blame.
Now, this one says, I no longer have love for my wife, but we still reside together. Any implication on either of us on this? Please advise.
There is no implication on this. A man can remain with a woman that, for one reason or the other, there is love lost amongst them. A woman can remain with a man. For one reason or the other, there is a love lost amongst them. What will bind them in that circumstance is fulfillment of rights. Fulfillment of rights. The man will fulfill the rights of a husband. The woman will fulfill the rights of a wife, despite the fact that there is no love. The love comes and goes. It grows and diminishes. There are marriages that have lasted 60, 70 years. And you can't say it was entire 60 years of love. You can't say it's an entire 50 years of love. Love, it goes up and down depending on the index upon which it was based. So it is not the only determinant of marriage. So love not be lost to God. His spouse, a man and a wife. But the right of marriage must be fulfilled at every point in time. So I'll advise the brother that, inshallah, he should make the efforts to be sure that he fulfills the rights of marriage to his wife, and that she makes good efforts to fulfill the rights of marriage to her husband. La'alla Allah yuhdithu ba'da dhalika amran. Perhaps Allah will involve a new situation in that time. Sometimes a man would even have divorced his wife. It is in the period of age that his mind is going. The hearts of the people are within the two of the fingers of that of man. It turns our heart in the direction that we desire. So let's not lose hope in that. We hope that Allah restores good feelings and love and intimacy between this brother and his wife. But the bigger thing is fulfilling the rights of marriage. Because if there is love amongst the man and his wife, and the rights of marriage are violated and not fulfilled, the second marriage in which the love is lost but the rights of marriage are fulfilled is a better marriage as far as the Sharia is concerned. The marriage in which there is love but the rights of marriage are violated is a lesser degree compared to the marriage where love is lost and the rights of marriage are fulfilled. It's better than a marriage where people claim to love themselves and still violate the rights of marriage. The most important thing between a man and a woman in marriage is that fulfilling the rights of marriage. Fulfilling the rights of marriage. In fact, in my view, you analyze most of the first cases, you begin to start from either the man is not fulfilling the rights of marriage or the woman is not fulfilling the rights of marriage. When a woman becomes disobedient to her husband, what she is because that she's not fulfilling the rights of marriage because the man has a right over her. When a man becomes irresponsible, not fulfilling the basic needs of the wife and the children, then she becomes to dislike him as a result. You see that is evolving now as a result of not fulfilling the rights of marriage. But the rights of marriage are so important. What ulama usually refer to as hukuku zawjain, the rights of the spouses. It's very, very important that he appreciates, beg Allah to make that brother love his wife and make his wife love him too, and help them in the fulfillment of the rights of life.
This one says, can the one who takes care of children who are in the orphanage, where their parents abandon them and one can't be sure if they are dead, can he get the reward of taking care of orphans? Then is it allowed to adopt them?
Well, the first question, when the orphanage amongst English people, it's not about just about a father dying and leaving the child who is not matured. They have a wider consideration because they also consider a child whose mother is a orphanage. When in Islam, orphanage for a human being is only when the father passes away. So a better thing for you to do is look for a Muslim orphanage home, because you are sure. I was asking, I did a few investigations yesterday about the consideration for accepting children in the orphanage that is owned by some Muslims. And they say, look, the basic condition is that the person is not matured, is an underage, and that the person loses the father. The person loses the father. To be sure, if you are sure that is the case, if you spend your money upon people in that kind of a case, you get the rewards that have been mentioned in Hadith. As for taking these children to yourself, taking over them, taking over their affairs, bringing them to school, bringing them under a shelter, bringing them under a home with compassion, kindness, taking care of their feeding, eating, and all of these as we do for our children. It's also lawful in Islam. It's also lawful in Islam. If you know their parents or you know whom they are, if you call them by the names of their parents. If your father's name is Abdullah, you mention the boy's name and say his name, his father's name is Abdullah. What the Sharia does not allow is that you call them by your own name. The boy is Abdullah. His father's name is Abdurraza. He said, because he brought him an adopted thing, we are going to change his name from Abdurrahman, his father's name from Abdurrahman to something. Don't do like this if you know the father's name. If you don't know the father's name, then it is not wrong to ascribe the boy to general a servant of Allah. In that case, Abdullah will mean one servant of Allah that specifically we don't know about. So you can take a child, if that is what you mean by adopting, you can take a child, an orphan, to your home. Of course, according to the country where you are or the state, follow the rules regarding that so that it does not become legal issues with government. Look for how not to violate the rules regarding that. But in the Sharia, you can take the child. You take the child to your home and you take care of her or him, as the case may be, and you feed him, provide compassion. You have that reward, as the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has said, the reward of Mujahideen, the rewards of Sa'imun, Alladina La Yafturun, the rewards of Qa'imun, Alladina La Yafturun, and they will become sitters for you, a covering, protection for you, away from the fire. I hope that those two questions are clearly answered, inshallah.
This one says, my sister's daughter has been living with me since she was 7 years. She lost her parents. If she grows up and started using niqab, can my husband still see her?
No, your husband cannot. The husband cannot be raised to stay in her
place. This one says, can a woman recite the Quran in the public to the hearing of non-mahram?
The voice of a woman is not an aura. I think that's where the people usually address the issue from. They are from the people in the Madrasa of Al-Imam Abu Hanifa, who consider the voice of the woman to be from Aura, who should not be exposed. So that view has a lot of advice that contradict them, even perhaps we can say that is of Quran. But there are clear cut ideas that shows that the voice of a woman is not necessarily something that must be concealed, even though she's advised that when she speaks, it's not she's not cockwet, is that how they pronounce that word? She's not dangling and twisting the voice when she speaks to a male. It's clear in the Quran. Allah talks about a bit, don't twist your voice when you speak to a man. So don't twist your voice when you speak to a man. So that it is prohibited to twist our voice. But to speak as an individual will speak normally. It's not prohibited basically when there is need for it between a woman and a man. But as for reading the Quran publicly, this will involve twisting her voice and being sure that she reads the Quran with a very, very sonorous voice. This is a basic rule regarding the Quran. Reading the Quran requires that it is done with a very sonorous voice, and it is prohibited from talking to men or relating with men with sonorous voice. So if you bring a matured young girl to the public, you ask her to read the Quran, it may be falling in the category of doing that, reading a voice, the Quran with a sonorous voice. Secondly, that this kind of a character is something that is very strange. It's something that is very strange. You will hardly find that the scholars in the early times bring a woman, Aisha radiallahu anha, who are the best reciters of the Quran, Hafsa radiallahu anha. These are from the best reciters of the Quran amongst the women. And there are no reports that the companions will bring them out and ask them to start reading the Quran in the public, to the entire public. So we should avoid from these kinds of behavior. Usually schools do this. They want to show their school and advertise their school. By that, they bring these young, innocent, matured girls in the public to read the Quran to the glare of men. These kinds of issues are things that require evidence in the Sharia. But many of the people set the blind eye towards these matters. They should be avoided. No woman should do these kinds of things. If she's teaching women Quran and some men begin to hear her teaching, and this is something that people used to hear Aisha radiallahu anha raising her voices when she read Azkar, but she was not talking to them. And those Azkar that she read, they were not as sonorous as she would read the Quran. So even after, even when a woman teaches fellow women, if we are sure that there will be men around who will be coveting the voice and all of these kinds of things should be avoided. How about bringing the woman in the public and asking her to read the Quran sonorously and all of these? These are things that we have just started in our own generation. May Allah protect us from these issues.
This one says,
we made this the last question.
This one says, can women look at adverts showing half naked women in scanty clothing to check the one they like when they intend to buy?
It is not love. The scholar, the Imam Al-Albani, was asked about looking at the pictures, looking at areas that a woman has been prohibited to see from another woman, and having that a man has been prohibited to see from a woman. So there's no difference. When you look at the picture, it's like you are looking at the person. When you look at the picture, it's like you are looking at the person. So if it's regarding a place that is not lawful for a woman to see from a woman, the place where it is not lawful for a woman to see from a woman, then no woman should look at that same place in the picture of another woman, saying that it's not me, it is my picture, it is the picture of you. That same place should not be seen from that woman. Is it clear by yourself? Just like it will not be lawful for a man to to see from the picture a place in a woman that is not lawful ordinarily for him to see if that woman were standing in front of him. Allahu Akbar.
We
can stop the class here, please.
No.
We'll continue with the discussions about the Arami, the woman who are single and without husbands, and the discussions regarding Aliya Shama, the husband, the Ibn-Allah.
Assalamualaikum.
Amin wa'alaikum.